In a world where 36% of children are born without fathers and half of marriages end in divorce, here's one father who cares about the future of the next generation. This is Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director of Christian Home Educators. I'm a pastor, but the reason I'm with you today, I'm a father of five, and I'm a father of four daughters and one son, and I care about the world in which I'm raising my children. I care a lot about it, but because, folks, there's been a lot of water under the bridge. There has been a lot of destruction in our culture, in our society about us over the last generation or two. And I'm concerned. 36% of children born without fathers, up from 5% in 1960. Half of marriages end in divorce. Some 50 million children lost their lives in the abortionists' laboratories over the last 30, 40 years. People are twice as lonely as they were 20 years ago. This is the brave new world that we live in, folks. And it is a product of a worldview. Let me ask you this question. Do you like this world? Do you like a world where 36% of children are born without fathers and half of marriages end in divorce? I'm telling you, it's going to be worse in the next generation. How are you raising your children? How are you raising them so that you can drive those numbers even higher? Not just 36% of children born without fathers, but let's make that number 50%. Not just half of marriages end in divorce, but how about 75% of marriages ending in divorce? Folks, ideas have consequences. These things don't happen in a vacuum. Ideas produce the consequences you see about you. And if you don't like the consequences, you gotta change the ideas. You got it. That's why worldviews are so important, and that's why we're concerned and we bring up these issues day in and day out on this program. Today the question is this: how does a feminist worldview fragment and isolate the family? How does it isolate our world? We're going to interview Jenny Chansey from LadiesAgainstFeminism.com and get her input in just a moment. Stay with us for Jenny Chansey next on Generations.
Fasten your seatbelt. Hang on to your hat. Generations will be right back. Embedded on the front lines of the war of the worldviews, here's your host, Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. It's good to have you tune in with us today. And today the topic is feminism. And with me on the line is Mrs. Jenny Chansey. She hosts a website. It's LadiesAgainstFeminism.com. And Jenny has been on the air with us before. She is the wife of Matt Chansey and the mother of seven children. Wow, Jenny, you've been busy.
Yes, especially having twins this past April. That made it easy to up the numbers.
Yeah, I'll bet. And you homeschool, I take it, the seven children?
Yes, we do.
And now you live in Alabama?
That's right.
Yeah, that's the great state of Judge Roy Moore. He lost the election, I take it, just a few months ago.
He did. We were very disappointed, and we're hoping that he will continue to work in the state politics in the future.
Yes. Well, we appreciate your ministry. You've been on the air with us before, and we want to talk a little bit about feminism, but let's define feminism first. What is it? What is this thing that you are against?
Well, what's ironic is that if you ask three feminists to define feminism, you'll get three different answers. And this is true from feminists going back 200 years. They all had different definitions of what it meant. But I think if you want a basic middle-of-the-road definition that all of them would agree upon, it's the idea that men and women are absolutely equal, should be treated equally, and that we shouldn't really have any defined roles that apply to either gender. In other words, it's unfair to stick moms with the kids all the time. Why shouldn't dad have the kids just as much of the time? Why shouldn't dads be the ones staying at home so moms can go straight back to work after having a baby? Why can't women make exactly the same wages as men? A lot of feminists have argued over the years that women are paid unfairly because they are women. And these are things that immediately raise the hackles on anyone's back. They think, well, that's right. That's unfair. Why shouldn't we be in favor of freeing women from the shackles that imprison them? My argument is that women really aren't in those shackles, and that if you have a biblical worldview, you understand that God's view of women is an incredibly freeing and beautiful view, and that you don't need feminism to supposedly take you out of any kind of a prison because you're not in one.
Now, Jenny, I think the word feminist is still not a widely accepted word, and I'm guessing there are a lot of Christians out there that don't want to think of themselves as feminazis. And yet, feminism really has impacted the way we think and live today.
Especially among young women today, college-age women and high school and just slightly under my age group and then up into the early 30s, they don't want to use the word feminist. If they want to talk about equal rights, that's one thing. But the word feminism has kind of become a bad word, and so they've tried other ways to phrase it so that it sounds a little more acceptable to their ears. Because when most people think of the word feminist, they're thinking, oh, those crazy women in the 60s who were in their bras and who were in favor of abortion. Most people don't identify with that. So they're looking for a nicer way to phrase things. But when it comes down to it, they still are identified with the feminist movement, because the feminist movement is one that from the beginning has sought to redefine the family away from the biblical definition, which is the father as provider, the woman as the helper and the mother of the children, and the family as a cohesive unit that works together for one common goal. Instead of dad goes here and does his thing, mom goes there and does her thing, and the kids are just taken care of by the state most of the day, and then when they all get together at night, you know, heaven help them if they even have a moment to sit down together, because we've got to fill up our days full of activities so that everybody has their own unique thing to do that isn't a part of what everybody else is doing.
Let's think about the effects of this feminist thinking for a moment. I think it's an increasingly atomized society, but now you've got the man on his independent career track, the woman on her independent career track. You've got the economic bifurcation of the home, which I think produces divorce and more isolation in society. What do you think about the effects of feminism in terms of the way that people live?
Oh, I completely agree that it has atomized the family. Today, more and more, we see families that are rushing to do so many different things. You've got Junior doing his baseball and the girl doing her ballet, and everybody's going a different direction. We've got to have our lives full of things that we do so that we feel like we're doing something important, but heaven forbid we should all do something together that has a common goal and that we can all enjoy and think about and talk about. And I have to admit, being spoiled, because I was brought up in a biblical family where my mom stayed home, my dad was the breadwinner. My dad was a unique kind of man. He did book writing and aviation history and traveled all over the world, and he took us with him. So our family was always together, and we did always have a common goal of helping my father with what he did. We were all excited about his latest projects and his books and his study and meeting veterans. To us, this was life, was being part of what dad did. And my mom was never just the appendage kind of hanging off there all I do is dishes and cleaning. Actually, by the time I was 8, my brother was 6, we did all the dishes and the cleaning and the laundry because she taught us how to do it, so that she was more freed up to help my dad by editing his books, talking with him about his various projects, planning trips. There was never a sense of, this is what dad does over here, and, oh, here are the rest of us, or this is what mom does over here. It was, how can we work together to make dad really successful, and what can we do as a family to be a team and be excited about our family goal. And aside from what my dad did in the working world, his goal for our entire family was that we would show the glory of Christ and the unity of the Godhead. He reminded us, God is Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, but unified. There is no infighting or backstabbing in the Trinity. It's perfect. It's beautiful. And we want to show that to the world as a family in the way that we function, whether it's in the way we earn money together, in the way that we speak together, in the way that we interact at the table. We want others to look and say, wow, what do they have that I don't have? And ask about so that we have an opportunity to share the glory of God and the gospel of Christ.
And that's the relational life that homeschooling and ministries like yours are bringing back. It's a relational life. And, you know, a National Science Foundation study, and we just got this yesterday, came out and said Americans are twice as lonely as they were in 1985, 20 years ago. So the effects of feminism is really beginning to isolate Americans, and yet it's coming back. Relational living is coming back. Let's look at what the feminists are saying, though. They're obviously destroying destroying our world, our civilization. But what are they saying? What are the ideas they're bringing out? And I'm just going to read you a couple of quotes. I want your comment on these, Jenny. The housewife, this comes from sociologist Jesse Bernard. The housewife is a nobody, and housework is a dead-end job. It may actually have a deteriorating effect on her mind. Here's another one, Charlotte Perkins Gilman. Housewives are an endless array of horse leeches, daughters crying, give, a parasite, etc. A woman's work within the home is not directly useful to society. It produces nothing. She is subordinate, secondary, parasitic. These are the sorts of things that they're saying. An assumption, I think, is children are worthless, and everything of value has to have a dollar sign attached to it. Have we reduced everything of value to dollar signs?
I think you've really hit the nail on the head there, and that's the problem we're facing. Our society is increasingly tuned into what you earn in your paycheck and how you're able to function in a society that's built around jobs and money and putting things in the bank. And by all means, those things are important. A man does have to earn a living. Families do have to have a way to support themselves. Yes, we do need the paycheck. But we don't need to be building our entire lives around the almighty dollar. And this is one thing that I learned growing up because my dad didn't have a regular paycheck. As a writer, you don't get money from some nice publisher who just decides, hey, I think I'll send Jeff Ethel $5,000 this month to support his family. No, you have to write the books and then pray that the money comes in, because sometimes the books don't sell well. And in the meantime, you're working on another project and you've got magazine articles going. There was never a steady income stream, but we always were taught, we trust the Lord, that as long as you work hard and you're putting the Lord first and honoring Him with what you do, He will give the increase. So in my family's worldview, you didn't really focus upon money all the time because it was a peripheral issue. The Lord was going to bring what we needed to live on, and He often did that in ways that were unexpected, by gifts from people when mom and dad were really at a hard time in their lives, when there wasn't a lot coming in. We were taught to look to the Lord and to pray for it, and we never doubted as children that He would bring it. But in today's society, we really do not have that worldview. We've been so dislocated from God as the center of our lives and looking to God and seeking His ways that now we are looking to the state. We have the welfare state. Well, they'll take care of the poor. We don't need to bother working with the poor. Oh, they'll take care of the elderly. We don't really need to bother with helping the elderly or widows or anything. Whereas God's Word shows that as we focus on those in need, we take care of those in the church that are needy. We take care of our own elderly. We help the poor, like Proverbs 31 says that the godly woman reaches out her hands to the poor. She is giving to those in need. Then money, the only focus money is how can I bless others? How can I use this money to increase God's kingdom? And if you look in church history, you find out that that was the focus of the early church. They were the ones who went into the places where people were dying of terrible diseases. They were the ones who took the widows and orphans in when their society, the Roman society, said, these are worthless people. Why are you bothering with them? And I think that's where we've come back around to in our American society. People look around and say, the unborn, well, they're useless anyway. I mean, why not get rid of the extra people? They'd probably just grow up to be criminals. Instead of seeing that the least of these are Christ's brethren, and that when we serve them, we are literally serving Christ and washing His feet. And that should be our focus as Christians, because the Lord rewards that, and the Lord uses it as a picture of how He deals with us.
And what is the value of seven children? I mean, that's what people are going to ask. They're going to say, what's the economic value of seven children? Is it, you know, $600, $700, $7 million? They want to put a dollar sign on it.
It's a big thing. You have to get away from dollar signs, just like we have to get away from saying, if I went and got a job, let's see, I could probably earn about $30,000 extra. Instead of thinking to yourself, if I don't go and get that job and I am available in the home, what will I be able to do to augment my family's ministry, my family's ability to reach out to others, our ability to have hospitality in our neighborhoods? Come home, you close your garage door, and basically you don't know anybody. They're all out there. There's all these lonely people living isolated right next to each other. And we really like to just bust open the doors and go out to the strangers and say, hey, come into my house. We'd love to get to know you. And at first people are kind of like, wow, that's weird. You know, I'm not used to that. But we're finding more and more that people want that. They're reaching out for it. They're hungry for it. They say, oh, hey, here's somebody who wants to get to know me and know about me, and they are willing to come in, and that is how we minister. But if you're not home, if you don't have the time, if you are worn out after a long day, how can you do it?
And of course, the 20th century was the century where the birth rate fell in half from 4.0 to 2.0, while the average square footage of a home increased by a factor of about 200%. So obviously we like drywall a lot more than we like human beings, and that's the values that we place upon human beings in this day and age. One more quote here for you, Jenny. It's Betty Friedan. Housewives are mindless and thing-hungry. They're not people. Housework is peculiarly suited to the capacities of feeble-minded girls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Seems to me what we have here is the assumption that raising children is a mindless task. And again, have the feminists sucked life completely clean of relationships? Somehow it seems like Betty here finds the cubicle more life-giving than the kitchen.
Oh, you're right. And what's interesting is when I share quotes like that, a lot of people say, oh, well, that was the feminist in the 60s. You have to realize we've evolved since then. Yet Linda Hirschman went on ABC's Good Morning America this year, and here's a direct quote from her. She said, I am saying an educated, competent adult's place is in the office. In other words, moms who stay at home with their children have given themselves to a calling that no educated or competent adult should desire or accept. So again, she's echoing Betty Friedan saying, what kind of a dummy stays at home with kids? Anyone can raise kids.
Jenny, I wonder if it comes down to where you're going to serve and who you're going to serve. Are you going to be a slave of a corporate boss and be handcuffed to a cubicle, or are you going to be a servant of children in a family and there serve God and serve the interests of his kingdom? It's just a matter of where you serve. And, of course, the feminists say it's much better to be the slave of the corporate world or the state than it is to be in a nurturing environment of a family and a church community.
Right, which I find highly ironic. I think it's really ironic that in 150 years ago, a woman who was considered only in terms of what she was worth as a paycheck was not a nice woman. She was a lady of the street. But today, if you are just looked at as a dollar sign, as a paycheck, wow, you've really arrived. You've hit that top of the ladder. Well, I'm sorry. I really want to be valued by who I am inside, who I am in my mind, what bothers me or concerns me in my heart. I want to concern others. I want to be known for the conversations that I've had with people, or the time around the dinner table, or just getting to know someone who's new in the neighborhood, a new mom who needs a little bit of help. That's what I want to be remembered for when I die, not, well, wow, she made so many thousands a year. No one's going to remember that when I'm under the grave and my tombstone is up. They're not going to put on my tombstone the paycheck amount that I earned. I sure hope they never would.
Jenny, I think there are a lot of parents listening right now who are thinking, you know, I really don't want to raise a feminist. I want my little girl to grow up but be something besides a feminist. And yet, how do you think we are raising girls to be feminists, say, in the schools? Are the schools training little feminists?
Well, I think it's doing two things. It's actually training little men to not be men, not take responsibility, but to lay back. We have a whole kind of a plague in America today of young men growing up to be just lazy. They don't want to get married. They don't really want to hold down a job. They're living longer and longer at home with their parents. And I'm not saying there's something wrong with a young man being at home with his parents. Perhaps he's apprenticing with his dad and going to set himself up in business. That's not inherently wrong right off the bat. But it's the young men who just want to play Nintendo and lie around all day, and maybe they'll get a job enough to get themselves a nice car. And this is something that has been noticed in the secular media. They call them twixters, the men who are between college graduating age and 40, who are just kind of floating around, no purpose in life. And this is what the public schools were designed to raise people to be. If you read the founders of the public school movement in Prussia at the beginning of the 19th century in America, this is what they were aiming for. Basically, a civilization of lemmings who would just follow along, whatever the current fad was, they would want to be in on it, but not thinking, not planning for the future, and definitely not working for the kingdom of God. And when you get men who just kind of lay back and don't do anything, well, women come along and our sin nature says, good grief, I can do a better job than that. Let me take over. I'll take the reins. I'll run things.
Jane, let's talk about what dads can do to encourage femininity versus feminism in their little daughters. I've got four myself, and we really want to raise feminine daughters, those that understand their God-given roles. How did that happen in your home as your dad raised you?
One of the ways Dad encouraged me to be feminine was just always telling me that I was beautiful, that he loved me, giving me hugs, being very affectionate, and making me feel like I was so loved I would never have looked anywhere else for that kind of affection. So I never really felt a desire to go out and seek a boyfriend or get in with a clique that was doing the boy-girl thing, because my dad was so fantastic, and he set up such a high example for me that I was never going to get married till I found somebody like my dad, and the Lord did bring somebody.
Let's go to the flip side now, and, you know, I'm sure there are some things that dads can do that actually you can create feminists. You could actually, you know, wind up damaging your little girls. What do you think are the traps that men can fall into in that regard?
Well, I know that my dad used to talk to men who had difficulty relating with their daughters, because he also did some Christian counseling, and he often pointed out that you can push your daughter in the opposite direction by not listening to her, when she, you want to be the one that your daughter goes to when she has a problem that she can't figure out. You want her to say, I bet Dad knows how to handle that. And that was my feeling. I could always talk to my dad. The lines of the communication were always open. And a lot of times when there are problems with girls, it's because there are no lines of communication with their fathers. Fathers either feel awkward about talking to a daughter, or they've just never tried it before, or they just really don't care about relating with their daughters. And that's a big mistake, because we as women need to feel the affirmation and the love of a father, and that's because God has built us that way, and that's the way that we are to demonstrate to the world the relationship that Christ has with his church, is by the way that husbands treat their wives and fathers treat their children, their daughters in particular. And something that encouraged femininity in me and that can discourage femininity in other girls is a father who is indifferent in the matter of dress. And I think this is really important today, because we're seeing such rampant immodesty. Everywhere you look, basically people are walking around in their underwear today. I'm still shocked when I go to the store sometimes and think, good grief, did you look in the mirror before you left the house? My dad would never have let me out the door dressed like that. But I think a lot of dads are just indifferent, thinking, oh, well, everybody dresses that way, so what's the big deal? Well, it's a big deal to God, not because God is a prude and wants us to hide ourselves, but because God loves femininity so much that he made male and female. And I think a big irony of feminism is that for us to be free and for us to be equal, we have to be just like men and dress like them, or we have to be harlots and basically make ourselves into something that society just paws over. So either women are exploited or they're hidden under a masculine attire, instead of saying, you know what, there's another way. There's a way that says, God made me woman. He loves the female form. He made it that way, and he wants me to protect it because it's for one person.
Jenny, I wonder if some dads fall into the trap of the gender blender themselves and begin to treat their sons and daughters very similarly. I mean, for example, a dad might be a little rough with his sons and throw them around the room and, you know, play sports on the same level with his sons as with his daughters. You think that could be a mistake?
Oh, absolutely, and I think that's an excellent point. My mother-in-law actually teaches etiquette, and she is one of the finest Southern ladies you could ever hope to meet. She raised her son to open doors for ladies, to pull out chairs, to stand when a lady enters the room, to stand up again when she leaves, do the same thing for the elderly, and it's not because there's something weird about women. It's because Scripture teaches that the man is to lay down his life for the woman, and that doesn't mean, hey, babe, I'd take a bullet for you any day, which, of course, probably will never happen in the course of your life. It means that on a day-to-day basis, you are demonstrating how Christ loves the church and laying down himself for her and sacrificing himself for her. And it is a beautiful thing, and it is a rare thing, when the world looks and sees a husband opening a door for his wife and deferring to her and saying, you go first. Here, let me pull out the chair for you. You be served first. That's one thing in our church. Every Sunday when we have a meal together, the pastor always says, remember, women and children first. We're going to serve the young first. We're going to get them settled, and that's how the men demonstrate that they are providing for the women. And it's a beautiful thing. It's wonderful. And when a father is treating his daughter just like he would treat a young man, roughing her up, wrestling with her, he's communicating to her, you're no different. God doesn't have a different role for you. You can be just like me. You can be just like your brothers. And sure, she might be just as strong. She might be just as good at it, but that isn't the point. The point is that God, in his wisdom, has created an economy that we're to live in.
Folks, highly practical stuff on this program today. The program is Generations. We've had Jenny Chansey online with us, and she's got a great website. It's called LadiesAgainstFeminism.com. Some stuff about feminism, but a lot of good articles, hundreds of good articles. Growing Old Gracefully. That's a recent article was just posted. Developing Standards of Modesty in Children. Why Hospitality? Singleness. Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. Priorities. Reviving the Lost Art of Correspondence. Some great practical articles. Jenny, you do a great job on that website. We appreciate what you do.
Oh, thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us today on Generations.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Folks, it matters how you raise your daughters. Are you raising them to be feminine or feminist? How you raise your daughters will determine to a great extent how they turn out. We have found a great resource for raising daughters. It is one of my very favorite books on the topic. It's called So Much More, by the Botkin sisters. This book brings up an intelligent approach to the worldview issues and the practical issues involved in raising daughters. Go to KevinSwanson.com and click on store, or call 877-842-CHECK. That's 877-842-CHECK. You can interact with this program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.